Well, guess what, Pete? Apple Silicon is very nearly here.
Yeah. Are you excited?
I am. I am moist. So welcome to episode 6 of the Constant Geekery podcast. This is the special lockdown edition because here in the UK we are now locked down. I can't be in the same room as Pete anymore, which is fine. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that, Pete.
Yeah, some would consider that a benefit, but for both of us. So here we are, miles apart, but you know, we're here together in spirit for you.
Excellent. So this may be a little bit different to our ordinary podcast because we are obviously video conferencing over Zoom. So there's a slight delay, which means we can't be as witty and pithy and as quick to respond as we might normally do.
Yeah, it may almost be like we're coming across like two slightly senile old codgers, but I can assure you that is just the delay of Zoom.
And absolutely nothing else. And to help the speech along, I'm going today with some liquid refreshment in the form of some Tamnavulin, Pete. A bit of single malt whiskey there. Because it is the evening time here. In the evening time, I like to have a glass of whiskey. So.
And I'm really pleased for you. I have none of those things because I'm a professional and I'm focused on being completely cognizant of what I'm saying for the podcast.
Thanks for that. So let's move on and actually talk about something technical. And our podcast today is all about Apple's event. Now, Apple's event happens on the 10th of November, and we're actually recording this on the 5th of November. And it's important to let you know that because, first of all, we wanted to have enough time to pull the pieces of the podcast together because this is obviously a new technique for us. And also because 5th of November here in the UK is fireworks night. So if you hear lots of explosions in the background, it's not because we live in a really dodgy area and there's some kind of street war going on. It's simply that people are letting off fireworks in their garden.
Yeah, it's not only that we live in a dodgy area, it's probably more accurate to say. No, we live in a lovely part of the world, so we're very lucky there. So for those of you that don't know, fireworks night in the UK is what's called Guy Fawkes Night, and it commemorates someone trying to blow up the government of the time several hundred years ago. So I'm not entirely sure why that is celebrated as a national day, but there you go. That's what we do in the UK, apparently.
Okay, so let's move on and talk about what Apple is doing in the US with their event, which they've entitled One More Thing. And I think that's a nice throwback, don't you, Pete?
Yeah, obviously that's harking back to Steve Jobs' mention of launching something right at the end of the show when everyone thought that the show was wrapped up, the event was wrapped up. He did that legendary One More Thing, and we've loved it ever since.
We have, and other people have borrowed that. In fact, I watched Dr. Lisa Su do the same thing pretty much at the AMD event last week. So nice anyway that they chose that as the name. And we're expecting the event to be, of course, about Apple Silicon. But yeah, there's a question attached to that.
Well, we don't know for certain, but it is highly likely because we've received an email invite as an Apple developer, haven't we, to that event. And that seems to indicate that's going to be the case.
Yeah, we don't get those invites for consumer events normally. So an Apple developer invite would indicate an event for the Mac. There's something else as well, Pete. Have you tried the AR? So if you go on your iPhone to the Apple website and you tap on the event logo, you get a nice sort of AR Easter egg come up, which is an Apple logo. But it's clearly emulating the lid of a notebook, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah. That's clearly an Easter egg for what we are to expect in this event, one would hope.
I should think so. And the colours that are displayed, I don't know if you noticed, Pete, but they're the same colours that are used in the desktop background for Big Sur.
Yes, I did notice that. So again, nice little subtle cues as to what we can expect at this event.
Excellent. So we're going to we're just going to run through some of the things that we think about the event. And this should be our normal Monday podcast going up on the 9th of November. But there's every possibility we might just launch it a little bit earlier. And we'll talk about that more at the end. But let's get to the main question here is, if there are going to be new Apple Macs, this new Apple hardware, what hardware should we expect?
And that's a good question. I think we're both of the view that we're probably not expecting a full lineup of machines at this point. Perhaps one, maybe two. What would your call be on what to expect then?
Well, I think it's a notebook. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Given all the leaks that we've had, and of course that AR, augmented reality Easter egg that we had, that's clearly a laptop. Now, of course, Apple have updated the Intel MacBooks over this year, but I think there's a good reason why we might see a 13-inch MacBook. But let's just run through the possible scenarios, and we'll probably answer that question. I just wanted to say, though, I saw an article in the Nikkei, if that's how you say it, Asian Review, where they think that Apple is planning to produce 2.5 million MacBooks with Apple Silicon by the end of February 2021. Now, to put that in context, they shipped 12.5 million MacBooks in the whole of 2019. So this is quite ambitious over the period of, what, two and a half months to ship, to produce 2.5 million MacBooks in that time.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So let's just run through the potential form factors. What are we expecting?
Okay, well, I think it's a given that they're going to want to get some kind of fanless MacBook, like the 12-inch MacBook of past, into the lineup. I think that's really, really, really likely. You know, something where they perhaps tone down the power on the first outing so they've got something to save for the next generation or maybe another announcement, and have something that really has phenomenal battery life. That would be my first call.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good shout, actually. But I think it would be probably in the MacBook Air chassis rather than, if you remember that 12-inch MacBook, it didn't have Thunderbolt. It had just one USB-C port. The MacBook Air itself might as well be fanless for all the good the fan that's in it does. I mean, it's not really connected in any meaningful way to the CPU. So I think you're probably right there, but I think it might be in the MacBook, a revision of the MacBook Air. And It's this battery life thing. You know, they made a big thing about all-day battery life, and the MacBook Air currently provides that. I think it's, is it 11 hours or something?
It is, which is all day for most people.
Right. So imagine the coup if they can say two-day battery life. I mean, we said this back in June when we reviewed the announcement event. If they can launch something with two-day battery life, consumers will lap that up. Long battery life, that's going to sell laptops, no problem. But Definitely. What about something more pro? What do you reckon, Pete?
Yeah, well, I think that's likely. I mean, just like the MacBook Pro 13-inch that we have at the moment isn't a true pro machine, I think that we could see the equivalent of a MacBook Pro 13 using the new silicon. And the reason for that is we already know that the existing Apple silicon in the A12X will outperform the top of the range 13-inch MacBook Pro. So we are actually talking about something, as I think about it, that is worthy of that pro moniker, especially if it has enough ports. But it would be lovely to see that and a fanless design to cover all the bases. That would be amazing, especially if it had great battery life too.
Yeah, so I think that's those are good shouts. Just to be clear, you know, we'll talk about the specifics of the silicon in a bit, but you take the A12X or A12Z, depending on where you live, that chip certainly is more powerful in multi-core performance and single-core performance than the top-of-the-range quad-core i7 that you can spec in the 13-inch MacBook Pro. Yeah. And it also outperforms the Iris Plus graphics as well. So, and the A14 chip takes that on a step. So again, we'll come back to the specifics of the silicon in a bit, but you'll have this situation where if they don't do it, even if they just put something equivalent to the A14 chip in the MacBook Air, they're already going to have a situation where the MacBook Air is outperforming the MacBook 13-inch MacBook Pro in a lot of cases. Bear in mind that many people who buy the 13-inch MacBook Pro don't spec that top processor.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say very few do. So it won't fit within the lineup if they don't do it. So I think they have to do a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think they'd be crazy not to showcase the power that's the potential there, because, you know, we've been hanging on for this ever since it was announced at WWDC. And we know there's a long rollout program over potentially a few years before we get the serious high-end machines. They're going to want to drip feed it, but they don't want to give us too little. They're going to want to give us a real taste of the power that's potentially out there in this new new silicon.
Yeah. So what about a MacBook Pro 16-inch?
Well, there are some people thinking that we'll see one at this event. And it's a hard one to call. It depends how good Apple Silicon is. It's going to have to be going some to beat the top specs on the top-end 16-inch models. I suppose it's possible it could sit alongside an entry-spec machine, but in light of what we've just said, that seems less plausible.
I think that... I think the silicon could easily be good enough to match the 6-core i7 that's in the 16-inch. I think it's not out of the realms of possibility that it could compete with the 8-core i9 that you can spec. But the key here is that the 13-inch MacBook Pro, if they make that with Apple Silicon and a decent performer, it's going to get so close to the performance of the 16-inch model, and in some cases beating out the 16-inch model, although possibly not on graphics, that it would give people pause for thought if they're looking to buy one of these things. So here's what I think. Lots of people are saying that these are the three laptops we're going to get. Lots of rumors saying that, 13-inch MacBook Air, 13-inch MacBook Pro, and a 16-inch MacBook Pro. But I wonder if that might be the case, and the 16-inch MacBook Pro is an announcement, but not immediately available. Don't know.
Okay. Yeah, so it ships sometime in the future, which we have been seeing that, haven't we? We've seen this will be available at the end of this week, and this will be available. Well, actually, there's some new products available from tomorrow as we record this, the 6th of November, from memory. So it could be a phased rollout, or they could be doing what Intel are doing and announcing things that aren't going to come around for another 6 months.
Yeah, let's not open that kind of worms yet.
Best not to.
Let's move on then, away from notebook form factor. Another possibility is the iMac 24. What do you think about this?
Well, the smaller iMac, the 21-inch, hasn't been updated in a while, has it? So it is possible. There is some talk about just making keeping the same essential form factor, but making the bezel smaller to get that 24-inch screen. I could see, in line with everything else that we've been seeing, and the fact that Apple haven't upgraded the baby iMac, I could see this being credible. But again, maybe not available immediately. But I wouldn't be surprised if we get a peek of what that looks like.
Yeah, that would be nice to see. I feel, again, that the issue they've got is if they put these Apple Silicon chips into the iMac 24, it's going to outperform most of the 27-inch lineup, and you end up with this weirdness. I mean, it's going to be very... Apple love to control pricing. Everything is very carefully thought out, and they control the pricing so that you're pushed up to the next model. And it's going to be very difficult for them to do that when they've got, you know, consumer-grade machines that are effectively getting very close, if not past, the performance of the more expensive, more professional-grade machines.
Yeah, and I suppose it would seem odd if you've got this... what's going to be a pretty incredible 24-inch iMac, and actually quite attractive, that size, I think, will be quite attractive for a lot of people, because the 21-inch looks quite small now with bigger screens coming along. That it used to look massive, but these days it looks quite twee and little. It's just not going to sit right if you've got this amazing 24-inch machine and you've still got the 27-inch iMac as it stands at the moment. So maybe it is something they'll either hold in the bag, or we could take it the other way and maybe we'll get a whole new iMac lineup. But I think that's less likely. I think if that was to be the case, we'd probably be seeing something maybe in quarter two of 2021.
Yeah, so to tie in with next year's WWDC, that's what I would expect. And there's also the Mac Mini. So I think that's possible. I mean, it hasn't been updated properly in a little while, has it? I think it would make more sense for desktop machines to come at a separate event. You know, have an event that focuses now on the notebooks, and, you know, because I think they're at a point with the silicon where it's ideal for notebooks. But they've probably got a little way. There's room for improvement for the desktop machines. And there are some really intriguing rumors at the moment of a desktop machine that looks like the Mac Pro, but is smaller.
Yeah. And that would be a lovely design to see. That would be really nice. I've actually got a question for you, just your thoughts on this, a bit of a curveball. With all this new Apple Silicon-based machines, do you think we are going to essentially see, we talked about a machine being in the MacBook Air chassis, do you think we're going to see the same chassis used for the Apple Silicon, or do you think there's going to be some visual differentiators so that people who've become early adopters particularly can show off their Apple Silicon to those who notice it?
I think, there's the possibility of new form factors, but I don't think they'll be specifically different because it's Apple Silicon. I think Apple has a standard design language, and they're just creating machines for that design language. I feel that at the moment the Mac Mini doesn't really fit within that. So I like the idea of a Mac Pro. I don't like the idea of the potential pricing that would go with that, but nonetheless. There's no need for the designs to be different. If you put these Apple Silicon chips, I'm avoiding using the term ARM processors. You know, we need to be clear here for folks watching at home that if you haven't watched any of our other videos, yes, they are ARM processors in the sense that they use the ARM architecture and instruction set, but they are very bespoke and customized by Apple. It's not a standard ARM design, so you can't really think of them.
Absolutely.
You know, just to call them an ARM chip doesn't really work. They don't need as much cooling, though, even so, because, you know, we've seen them in the iPads and they don't have fans. So it doesn't need a massive case like the Mac Pro.
No.
Unless you're putting adding cards in and various other things. So that's a very long-winded answer to your question. And the simple answer is I don't know. I don't think Apple are specifically looking to do designs at this point in time to help you stand out from the crowd. I think maybe that would come in a couple of years' time when they're starting to back away from Intel. But there is the question of, you know, will there be another Intel Mac at this event?
Well, Tim Cook at WWDC did say that there would be more Intel machines, but of course we have had more Intel machines. So it's a question of, is it just...
There's only been one, hasn't there, Pete? Unless I've got this wrong, I think it was only since WWDC, it's only been the iMac 27-inch that's been updated. And it was a reasonable update. I mean, they changed some of the internals, didn't they, and brought in the 10th-gen Intel processors. But I can't think of any other machines that we've had since then.
Yeah, we did a video on that iMac, and it is a very good machine. But you're right, Tim did, if I recall correctly, use the plural, and we have only seen the one. So that does seem likely that we will see some more Intel machines along the way. But that kind of takes me back to my point about visual differentiation. I wonder if, I agree with you, I don't think we're going to see chassis differences, but I wonder if there's going to be small indicators that indicate that you've got something a bit different, maybe the color of the Apple logo on the back or some subtle indication that you've got something a bit more special, a bit different. Because I think people do like that badge of honor, especially the early adopters, and I think Apple will definitely recognize that. So I'd be expecting some kind of small visual differentiator for the Apple Silicon powered stuff. Maybe a nice sticker like the Intel Inside ones used to have.
I think what would be nice is if they lit up the Apple logo again on the lid of the laptop. That would be good.
Well, the battery power will be there for it, so why not?
Yeah. Well, I think it always just used the it always used the screen backlight, didn't it? So I don't think it took any. It wasn't a separate light. Anyway, we've got a huge page of notes for this, and let's move it on. Let's talk about the new silicon. So Apple Silicon, what is it not, Pete?
It is not an iPad chip.
Right. And I think it's really important to say this because when, and at least I really hope that we're not proven wrong with this, but when Apple announced this for WWDC, they said they were producing Mac-specific silicon. And they will have to do something different anyway for the feature set of Mac OS. And there is the situation at the moment, the developer kit, which has the A12Z CPU, doesn't support everything. For example, it can't do virtualization. So no developers have been able to do that. So let's just be very clear about what it is. However, it is certainly going to be based on the same underpinnings as the A14 Bionic chip that has recently been released in the iPad Air and the iPhone 12. And that uses TSMC, which is a foundry that makes the chips for Apple, and they are using their 5-nanometer process on these chips. And that's if you're not massively technically minded, that's a good thing. So how does it differ from the iPad chip? That's the question.
Well, I think, well, not I think, it's going to have additional CPU and GPU cores to be capable of doing what needs to be done. And I think it's important, you know, we've said it's not just an iPad chip, but we have been basing some of our evaluations on that because that's the closest thing we have, and it's using that same 5-nanometer process. Those benchmarks that we've looked at help us to see what's possible with less CPU cores. That's the key, isn't it? We did a video on that.
Yeah, we did. And so just a very brief recap, you're talking about that existing iPad chip has single core performance that's better than pretty much anything that's on the market from AMD and Intel at the moment for consumers. When it comes to multi-core performance, it's very good. It's not up to the top level yet of those iPad Pro chips, but that's simply down to the number of cores. So I would expect the Mac specific Apple Silicon will have those additional cores. I think it's a 6-core in the iPad Air. I'd expect it to be at least an 8-core. And then it's probably going to have additional GPU performance. But as it is, the A14 Bionic outperforms, again, any kind of integrated GPU that's on offer from AMD or Intel. It's very quick. And if Apple added additional GPU cores, we felt that it would be perfectly possible for them to be getting up to kind of Radeon Pro 560 performance, which was one of the top graphics cards in the 15-inch MacBook Pro only a year ago, just over a year ago. So that's where it could be. How will we differentiate it, though, from these iPad chips, do you think, Pete?
Well, I think we do need to differentiate it because so many people are almost mocking the fact it's just an iPad chip in a laptop. And as we've established, no, this is going to be a lot more than that. But it can take advantage of the better thermal properties that a laptop can afford it, a notebook can afford it, than an iPad can. We don't know what that's going to be, but, you know, the current chips have got the prefix of A. Maybe these have a prefix of M for Mac. You know, so you have an M14. Who knows? We'll have to see. And maybe they'll differentiate the performance of those, depending. You might have an M14X and an M14Z or Z, depending on where you are. Have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea. And I'm just hoping that it does come with that support for virtualization for developers, you know, particularly for us and people who don't watch the channel regularly. Pete and I own a web studio, so we do software development and web development. So our developers are interested in running virtual machines. That's how they get their work done. You can't do that on an iPad chip. It just isn't it doesn't have that capability. So I'm hoping they're going to introduce that for Mac. The indications is that they are. So, and there are other things that are missing as well, you know, like AVX support. So without getting into too deep here, you know, some audio plugins that professionals use would require that AVX support that Intel chips can provide, but Apple Silicon can't at the moment. So there are still things where Apple Silicon can't cover all bases yet. So we'll see how all of that goes. Anything else that we might expect from a hardware point of view?
Oh, well, I would like to see whether we can expect it. I think we probably can expect at least some teasers on the development of the GPUs, and perhaps some clarity around Apple's future plans for GPUs and eGPU support as well.
Yeah, so I'd be very keen on finding out about eGPU support. Is there any reason why we can't have these things with Apple Silicon?
There's no technical reason.
No, I can't think of one. And I think, you know, as we'll talk about this GPU in a moment, it's still going to take a while for Apple to get close to the kind of graphics cards that are available. You know, AMD have just launched their new architecture and new graphics cards. NVIDIA have just launched theirs. Not that Apple use NVIDIA. That's another story for another day. But certainly there's a lot of GPU horsepower that people can put in a Mac Pro at the moment. If Apple want to move people across to Apple Silicon, surely they'll have to support dedicated GPUs in some way. And it would be really great if we could still have eGPU support. You know, I like the smaller notebook, as you know. Don't get on with a bigger one. I've tried it. It just doesn't work for me. So I like to have a smaller notebook that I can plug into my eGPU and still do editing work on and various other things. So please, Apple, let's hope.
Please.
However, what about these rumours, Pete?
You're talking about the rumours about Apple. This is the old delays kicking in a bit here. Apple are rumoured to be working on a dedicated GPU.
Yeah. Do we think that's likely?
So, I think it is. It has to be the case. It has to be the case. The question is, will it be any good, do you think?
Well, I've been having an interesting bit of dialogue, actually, with a commenter on the YouTube channel. So if you're not listening to us on YouTube, then it's youtube.com/constantgeekery if you'd like to check us out there and join in with the comments. Interesting chat anyway about this. But Apple, by all accounts, have been quietly poaching people from their competitors, the likes of AMD, Imagination Technologies, I don't know who else, but I've certainly seen rumors about those two companies. And these rumors, they go right back to 2014. So by all accounts, Apple have got a GPU team based in Orlando. And I've actually seen job adverts on LinkedIn for GPU staff, GPU engineers to work in Orlando for Apple. So I don't think those are faked. So I believe that that's likely to have happened. And these guys are not sat there twiddling their thumbs, are they? They've been there for 6 years at least. So they must be working on something. I think they've already shown what they can do with a system on chip. And, you know, that's a limited... It limits how much they can do with the graphics. Imagine if they can get outside of the constraints of that system on chip and build a dedicated GPU. Although, that said, one of the things that Apple's been speaking about with developers is the benefits of using a GPU that's integrated in a system on chip. So I'm not convinced either way. I think that the role for a dedicated GPU will be in addition to the integrated GPU that's on Apple Silicon, and it will perform some additional heavy lifting work. So I don't think it'd be quite the same as the relationship we have at the moment. Like in your MacBook Pro 16-inch, for example, Pete, you've got your Intel onboard graphics, and then you've got your 5300M. But it switches from one to the other, doesn't it? It doesn't use them both in conjunction. Yeah. So I think a dedicated GPU from Apple will have to augment this whole system-on-chip idea and the Apple Silicon idea. So I've been talking a lot, but that's kind of what I think. How close do you think they are?
I think... Well, I just wanted to reinforce that Apple philosophy about how they use pieces of hardware to accelerate certain things. Like it's the T2 chip, isn't it, that does certain things when you're rendering video, if you have that available. So Apple are very much about, you know, making use of additional stuff when the task requires it. And we did a video recently about real world performance and how often when you work in Excel or Word, you don't need that extra performance. So I could see a dedicated GPU from Apple just, you know, being there when you need it. But I think it's probably some way off yet, because Apple will want to get that right and they will want to make it another sucker punch to others out there. But it's definitely the missing piece to complete Apple's puzzle, if you like, of moving away from other vendors' hardware and silicon for their machines.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And the thing is, of course, they've got the money to do it. And Apple have shown, you know, we said this before, we don't agree with their business morals and ethics and all the rest of it. I think Apple would be perfectly happy with total global domination. I don't know whether Tim Cook's got a personal fancy for swivel chairs and white cats to stroke and that sort of global domination. I don't know. But I think if they can do it, they would do it. And I think only a fool would bet against them.
Yeah, I agree.
Good. So let's sort of sum up this part then. What do we think? What do we think is coming tomorrow? Let's make some predictions. Put the necks on the block, Pete. What do we think is coming? Not tomorrow. Okay. Well, it could be tomorrow. It depends when we launch the podcast.
For the Apple event on the whatever it is of November.
10th,
thank you. 10th of November. I'm going to go with two 13-inch laptops. One consumer-focused and a long battery life. And then something with more focus on performance. And I'm also going to go and say one will be available maybe immediately, and the other one might be in a few weeks' time. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if it's available in time for Christmas.
Yeah, I think there's a potential for another machine, but again, possibly not immediately available. And obviously, this is gonna really suck for me because I've put it out there that I'm going to buy one of these machines as soon as possible. So I'm really hoping that I don't end up having to buy the turd, you know, the one that nobody really wants because I've got to get it quick enough. Because unfortunately, we are in this situation where, you know, we're making videos at the moment for YouTube. And just to, so people on YouTube can understand the economics of doing this. Pete and I are in this rather privileged position where we're kind of semi-retired from our business and we're able to invest our money in building a YouTube channel. But if you added up all the money that we earned from ad revenue, sponsorships and everything else to this point in time versus what we've spent on equipment and time getting this together, then I think it's fair to say that we are very severely in the red. Are we not, Pete?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. It's definitely at the moment a passion project. Hopefully you can see how passionate we are about it, but yeah, having to then go out and buy Apple silicon for the channel, we want to make sure it's the good one. But I'm confident that we get some lovely comments on this channel. I'm confident that people will be really pleased that we go out and do that for them. Even if we do get, let's be honest, no Apple silicon machine is going to be a turd. It might just be a lesser machine than you choose, but you know, we'll see what we can do.
Good. Well, we'll certainly if everything's available to order straight away, we'll get straight on that and we'll video our decision making process and everything else. And our ideal is to get something in so that we can get testing straight away. So that's why I hope that we're going to get something with reasonable performance. And obviously it's time critical to get the views on YouTube and we'd like to get to 10,000 subscribers by the end of the year. I think as of recording today, we're on about 6,300 and a bit. So if you're feeling kind and rightly disposed towards it, then head on over to YouTube and hit the subscribe button. We really appreciate it. Anyway, plug over. Let's move on to some software announcements. What software announcements are we going to get? I mean, there's one obvious one, isn't there?
Go on.
Well, launch of Big Sur. So that will be available for download, won't it, for everybody?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a no-brainer, really, isn't it? But on top of that, hopefully they will have dealt with the battery icon by then as well.
That's already fixed, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they already changed that.
Didn't keep up with that one. The baby bottle feeder. Have a look back at that if you want to laugh. But obviously with Apple Silicon being what we think is going to be the focus of this, then I fully expect that Apple's applications will have a native Apple Silicon binary at that point. So that's things like Final Cut Pro, Logic Pro, Xcode, and some of their consumer apps that you natively get with Mac OS.
Yeah.
Anything I've missed?
I think that's reasonable to expect. Whether they'll do every single one of their apps is another question, because I suspect some of them are quite lightweight and will run through Rosetta, so they'll get translated. Who knows? I think third-party apps, that's something they're going to need to feature. I mean, everyone expects that Apple are going to update Final Cut Pro or Logic or any of these others, but third-party app support at launch. And they did mention two contenders at the June event, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. So we got the Adobe are working on their Creative Suite and providing an Apple Silicon supported version of that. And obviously Microsoft and Office 365, that's going to help shift entry level devices. And actually, I did read an article that came out today that the latest version of Excel, the latest beta version of Excel, which you can get an early preview of if you're signed up to that program with Microsoft, does have Apple Silicon support in it. So it's already there.
Yeah, well, they did say that Tim Cook said, or somebody said anyway, at that event, that they'd been working already with Adobe and Microsoft and a couple of others as well prior to opening up development support for everybody. So I think those things are obviously incredibly important for creative professionals, incredibly important for the business market, Office 365. I think as well, there might be some preferred smaller developers who have received additional support. I'm thinking the likes of Serif, who make Affinity Photo and Affinity Designer, which are brilliant apps. I'm just going to put a plug in for Serif, not that we're sponsored by them in any way whatsoever. But we moved our web studio away from Adobe and we use Serif's products instead. And that's not been a decision we've regretted. So,
yeah, very good.
Apple have worked with, you know, they featured Serif before. So I think that's just one example of a kind of preferred smaller developer that might have received some additional support. Something I'm personally hoping for, of course, is that DaVinci Resolve will be available in an Apple Silicon version. We'll see.
You keep banging that drum.
I've got to be honest, it's working really well for me. I know, you know, everyone has their own favorite, but since I moved from Final Cut to DaVinci, I've found that I've just found life is better in the video editing world. Anything else? Any other types of apps?
Well, we've talked about GPUs and that Apple are going to want to prove the ability of its GPU. So I think there's going to be some focus on some game titles. Now, Apple have never focused on what we would call serious gaming. They're much more about the casual gamer. But that doesn't mean that the casual gamer wants, you know, an inferior experience when they're playing their game. So I think there might be some game titles out there that will be credible to play.
Yeah, I agree with that. Again, you know, we get some comments on this. We're not talking here at all about super massive frame rates in 4K on the latest AAA titles with all the settings set to ultra. That's not what we're talking about here. We're just talking about casual games that look good. The kind of games that you would have played 5 years ago, you know, and they will look as good as they did then. You know, I mean, you already look at the iPad games and they're console quality, aren't they? They're not next gen console quality, but they, you know, it still looks good. And Apple wants that casual gaming market. They've launched Apple Arcade, so they are interested in gaming, but they're not going after the kind of user that's going to build a custom liquid-cooled PC and run Steam. That's not their target market.
No, and they do know their market. They know their customer, and they know that those customers will not have a bit of casual gaming. So they want that to be a good experience.
And they want that subscription dollar as well, don't they, Pete?
Yeah, which leads nicely into what I think we might also have an update on, which is the Apple One subscription status, because we know that's coming before the end of the year. So it may be maybe that we hear more on that at this point.
Yeah. Okay, so this is just they announced this at the Watch event, didn't they? So it's a combined one, you know, one-stop subscription for all of the Apple services with a few different pricing levels. We're not going to get into detail on that now. So here's the question that lots of people are asking, Pete, and I'm interested to see how you would answer these two questions, in fact.
Okay.
Apple Silicon Max, is it just an iPad in a MacBook frock? And are Apple trying to deviously merge iOS with macOS?
No. And no.
Good.
That's my answers. Would you like me to sort of elucidate on that a little bit? MacBook is for a different, again, it goes back to who your target customer is. MacBook users generally are a different type of user to iPad users. Now, I know you've used an iPad for several weeks when you had no choice to do your day-to-day work, and you can do it. And that's the iPad's credit. But I would never want to replace my MacBook Pro at this point with an iPad. There's too many things that this does that I could never get on with an iPad through choice. Apple know that. So they're not just going to redress something, and they're not going to try and merge macOS with iOS, because if they did that, and if they did just try and dress up an iPad in a MacBook body, they're going to lose customers, because that's not what those customers want. They're different. So I suspect it'll be a combination, much like it is now. That's what I think they're trying to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, there are people who are concerned that they think one of the things Apple's trying to do is to force apps to go through their Mac store. Like on, you know, on your iPad or your iPhone, you've got to go to the App Store to download your apps. People are worried that they'll do the same thing on Mac. I'm going to just say, yes, Apple would absolutely love that. I don't think it's in their interest to do it, and I don't think they will do it. I think they will encourage developers to distribute apps via their app store, but they won't make that a something that they have to do. What about the idea of being able to run iOS apps on macOS? You know, a lot of people are rubbishing that as a, well, you know, why would you ever want to do that? And they think that it's just going to stifle development, because developers won't bother spending the time to build a proper macOS version of their software because their iPad version already runs, for example.
Well, I don't think it will. I understand the argument, but if you've gone to the hard work of making an iOS version of something or a macOS version of something, why would you not then, I suppose going from iOS to macOS is probably the better example, why would you not go to the extra effort of taking advantages of the features and the power that macOS and the hardware is going to give you? I think it will actually encourage more development.
Yeah, because most of the heavy lifting is already done. They're not having to rewrite the app, you know, it's... And I think that will do the opposite. I totally agree with you. I've got to say, at this point, you know, people who are making jokes about iPad chips, you know, those jokes are getting pretty old, and they seem a little bit disingenuous, dare I say even stupid now, because it's been proven beyond, you know, any doubt that Apple's chips are good performers. That's not in question anymore. I think there is still, there's an area of consumers who don't understand what Apple are trying to do, because they're so in the PC mindset, you know, of super fast CPU, super fast GPU, that they can't understand this other approach to computing. And they're afraid of what they don't know, and so they rubbish it. I think there are other people who, you know, and just cannot conceive of being able to buy into Apple's ecosystem. I'm sure that's true of a lot of people around the world. You know, these computers are fantastically expensive, really, when you think about it. And so as a result of that, you know, it's something they can't have, so they attack it. And I think that's where a lot of this stuff comes from. I'm prepared to be wrong on this, but I'm just hoping that Apple pleasantly surprises everybody next week by showing what they've been thinking about. You know, all of the things that we've spoken about in various videos since that announcement. I'd like to see Apple come good on all of that stuff and deliver a genuine step change to computing. You know, something that hasn't happened for a very long time.
The performance of these chips is unquestionable at this point. We're seeing it, and the computer science that we're seeing being applied to this is actually refreshing. It does remind me of the earlier days of computing, when understanding how different parts of the machine worked well together and optimizing and just making things as efficient as possible was a thing. And I completely agree with you. Yes, Apple machines, Apple devices are eye-wateringly expensive. Depending on where you are in the world, they can be unobtainable. And I think that puts people off. But equally, if you don't understand what Apple are trying to do with system on chips, with the whole concept of Apple Silicon, you're just thinking about meaty CPU, meaty GPU, then, yeah, it's going to bypass you, and that can make you then want to cause it to be the butt of jokes. But I think next week, when we see this stuff running and when it gets out into the wild, I think there will still be detractors because they don't want to understand it, and they'll just point at raw figures as opposed to the experience it gives you. But I think we're about to see a seismic change in computing.
Yeah, I agree with you. Good. Well, what about other products? I've thought of two possibles: AirPods Studio and AirTags. Any thoughts? Are we going to see those next week?
Well, I predicted we would at the last event, and I did end up with egg on my face. Thinking about it, I don't think we will. I think we'll probably be waiting to next year. Certainly with AirTags, I think they did say they would be delayed till next year. But also, this is very much, there is a consumer element to this event, but developers have been invited. I think AirPods Studio and AirTags would make more sense at an out-and-out consumer event rather than this event.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I think next year, and I'm hoping at the same event, we might get a new iPad Pro as well. But that's another discussion for another day. Now, I suspect that during this event, we are going to have to sit through Apple celebrating itself, as it always does, talk about how the Mac has changed the world in some way, and probably a whole bunch of environmental commentary as well. And yeah. I just want to call Apple out on this, and I want to come back to the iPhone 12, that recent event. We've had comments, and you know, we spoke about this in a previous podcast. They are not including a charger in the box with the iPhone 12, and
they claim for environmental reasons because everyone's got one.
Right. So here's the question: why include a USB-C to Lightning cable in the box if you're expecting everyone to use their existing iPhone charger, which has a USB-A port on it?
Which won't fit the old charger. Well,
I've had varying comments on this, Pete, and one of the ones that keeps coming up is, well, it's USB-C supports power delivery, that's absolutely true, it does. The USB-C standard supports sending power 100 watts over that connection.
Yeah, but
go on.
The Lightning plug at the other end doesn't.
That's it. It's got a Lightning plug at the other end. So Apple's fast charger is 18 watts. Okay, now, in fairness, that is higher than USB Type-A can support. Now, technically, I believe, and someone will no doubt correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Type-A can support 15 watts, but it's unusual to see chargers at that level. Most people would have a 12-watt charger, which equates to 2.4 amps. And indeed, Apple have one of those, which is the iPad charger, the old iPad charger. And if you use one of those, it's actually not that much slower to get to a full charge than the fast charger is. Now, I will just say the fast charger gets to that, you know, it does that initial bit of charging up to 50% very quickly, but it slows right down after that. So it's not actually a huge amount of difference. So a lot of people would then just turn around and say, well, okay, they put the wrong cable in the box, but that doesn't mean that they're not doing this for good environmental reasons. You can just use your old cable.
What, right? With no fast charging?
Well, this is it. Then you lose this fast charging excitement that Apple's talking about. Here's what I think, right? It's designed to get the customer thinking about chargers. Oh, there's no charger in the box. I've now got to think about this because Apple aren't supplying a charger. And let's face it, do you use the iPhone charger? Have you ever used an iPhone charger that came with the box?
Not in recent years.
No, which, you know, probably supports the argument for it being an environmental step to take it out of the box. I personally leave mine in its packaging when I sell the iPhone on after I finish with it. Someone gets a fresh plug. The reason I don't use it is because it's a 1-amp charger. And it takes too long, so I've got a faster solution. But anyway, the average customer may not think that way. They go into the Apple store, they pick up their phone, but they're told, oh, there's no charger in the box. So now they've got to think about charger. Conveniently, Apple has on the shelf a fast USB-C charger, which will work with the supplied cable in the box.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. Or you can go with this new MagSafe wireless charger, which is not necessary, incidentally, because the iPhone will still work with existing wireless charging pads. So Apple have created a new wireless charging system, which will cause people to perhaps think they need that instead of using their existing wireless charging pad that they might have bought from, you know, Mophie or whatever. So the consumers, they're thinking about chargers because there isn't a charger in the box, and now they're going to upgrade, aren't they? They're either going to buy that fast charger or they're going to buy the MagSafe charger.
Yeah.
Neither of which is an environmental step forward, is it? Not yet.
No, definitely not. And you don't get fast charging with a wireless charger either. It's only 7.5 watts, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you lose out on both counts. Basically, it's a masterstroke of positioning, one might say, to sell more stuff, to put more money in Apple's wallet.
Yeah, and when we've said that in the past, we've been lambasted for that, but you know, we do a little bit of marketing, Pete and I, in our professional careers. Just a little bit of marketing. So we understand how these things go. If you feel a little bit confused by the discussion we've just had, well, that's exactly the point. You confuse the customers, then you're likely to get a sale because the customer's there in the Apple shop and it's like, oh, well, I know one of these is going to work, so therefore I'll buy it. And there's another great little sales tool that they're using here, which is give someone a choice of two things. If you present someone with a choice of two things, they're going to choose one of those things. Most consumers are not going to go, I'll choose the third option that you haven't presented to me, which is not buy a charger at all. So I'm sure some consumers will do that. But I think, you know, the average Joe walking in off the street buying an iPhone is probably still going to buy a charger to go with it, which means extra money for Apple and doesn't help, at least immediately, with the environmental concern. It will help the environment. The next trend.
Well, unless they change, you know, they come up with a new connection technology that we've yet to see. I was impressed at first, and I have to say, Apple are doing their thing for the supply chain and that. So we're not completely lambasting all of Apple's environmental efforts, but the charger one just stood out to us as, I bet there's a spreadsheet or a numbers sheet. Do you think Apple uses internally numbers or Excel? Who knows? But there's a sheet somewhere that's done the projections of how much they're going to make from exactly the choice you just said on charging accessories.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. And the reason why we're bringing this up is because, of course, MagSafe was originally the charging standard it was the name given to the charger for the MacBooks. And I'm just kind of hoping, Pete, I don't think this is likely, but I'm just hoping Apple doesn't do something stupid like remove USB-C charging from the MacBook range and replace it with some MagSafe proprietary type of charger.
Now you've said that, you know, that's exactly what we're going to find out about, isn't it? That's going to be the differentiator. There's going to be no ports on these new machines whatsoever. They're going to be completely sealed. Everything's going to be done through a magnet.
Okay, so speaking of magnets.
Hyperbole.
Let's move on, because I know how much you love magnets, Pete, and you got all excited when you saw
all these men kind of love magnets.
I do like magnets, but I wasn't quite as excited as you to see the Apple Wallet, for example. And we've seen quite an amusing review of this on Mac Rumors on YouTube, didn't we?
It's brilliant. So just for those that aren't aware, the new Apple Wallet is a piece of leather with a magnet in it that if you have one of the new iPhones will snap onto the back of it and carry your cards around. But it only holds three cards. Now, just out of interest, well, let me ask you a couple of questions. So it's very tight. So if you've got three cards in there, it's really difficult to get the cards out. There's a technique to it, which then makes you wonder, well, what happens if I only have one in it? Is it going to just kind of fall out? Three cards. So let me ask you, as a businessman, how many cards do you have to carry, Dave?
Right. Well, I knew you were going to ask me this, so I've pre-prepared. I'm not going to get my wallet out now. And 9 is the answer to that. That may seem a little bit extreme, but we've got, I'm part of 3 companies. So I have a payment card for each of those companies. For one of them, I've got a credit card as well. Plus, I have my personal bank cards, joint account, personal account, couple of credit cards. So yeah, 9. I would need
plus your driving license,
plus my driving license, and yeah, other ID as well. So I probably need 4 Apple wallets and presumably 4 iPhones to attach them to. I'm being facetious. I don't think, you know, Apple designed this with the idea that this was going to replace a conventional wallet. I think it's a place to carry a few cards. So, you know, but
yeah,
still,
I think most people, sure, some have people more than 3. Yeah, although I know some people in the comments are going, oh, we use Apple Pay now. I've just got a couple of cards. What do you do, guys, walking around with loads of cards for? So I'm sure we'll get lambasted from it. And we are being a little bit facetious about this. But what cards have magnetic strips on them, don't they?
They do. We don't use them very much anymore, in fairness, do we? We use the chip more, or contactless.
Yeah, but there are old ATMs that still use the magnetic strip reader and certain devices as a backup. I'm pretty sure it's not a good idea to have a strong magnet near a magnetic strip that holds data you want to keep.
No, it's probably... Well, I was always told not to do that. I mean, I can remember back to ye old days of cassette tapes and magnets and how easy it was to destroy a recording.
Yeah. I actually destroyed a television once with a magnet in a massive Celestion speaker. So I put it, unbeknownst to me, next to a television, and it kind of just shifted a whole load of colours, and it was not a winner.
No, ruins them. Yeah, that's a good shout. And I can tell you that on my 9 cards, because I know the Apple card, you know, which is only available in the States, but that doesn't have a magnetic stripe. At least I don't think it does. But I can tell you every single one of the 9 cards that I've got in my wallet has a magnetic stripe on it. So I wouldn't be putting them into a wallet that has a strong magnet, for sure.
Okay. Maybe it's something that's more common in the UK. I don't know. Have to ask our listeners in the States to tell us, have you got magnetic strips on the back of your cards?
Mm. How about... charging the phone wirelessly using your new MagSafe charger, which you bought at the Apple store because you were confused and you didn't know what to buy. Can you charge your phone whilst you got your wallet on?
No, you can't. So you have to take it off.
Mm. And here's the absolute best bit. And this is where... So if you can imagine an iPhone with this wallet attached to the back of it and someone putting that into their jeans pocket, which... Mac Rumors demonstrated very well in their video. And what happens is the jeans pocket slides between the iPhone and the wallet. The phone goes in the pocket, the wallet goes on the floor. I cannot understand how a company that prides itself on industrial design and testing and quality and can make such an enormous gaffe.
It's wallet gate, isn't it? It's you know what's going to happen. It's going to be you're putting it in your pocket wrong.
Yeah. It so is. It so is. And that's £59 in the UK for that little slither of leather. And so my recommendation to you is get a Bellroy. So, again, we're not sponsored by Bellroy, but I have a Bellroy wallet. It's got to be 5 years old. It carries my 9 cards plus associated ID and various other bits and bobs, and it's really quite thin. It's not too bulky. Very nicely designed things. So for that kind of money...
Very rarely opened as well.
Very dust comes out. A few moths might fly out if I dared to open it. Anyway, moving on. The reason why we bring these things up is because we're desperately hoping that Apple doesn't have any gaffes this time. You know, don't go waxing lyrical about your environmental credentials and then put the wrong cable in the box and undo all of your work. Or, you know, be seen very publicly to be so anti the repair and reuse movement, you know. So you're ending up, yeah, okay, you're recycling machines, but that's kind of the last step of the process. We'd like to be able to repair them first. Apple definitely doesn't want anybody doing that. And it wouldn't be the first time either that they've done a product design gaffe in the Mac world, would it be, Pete?
No.
Is there any particular device you're kind of hoping that maybe Apple will redesign?
Yeah. This.
So, Pete, for the listeners... Yeah, Pete's holding up a magic mouse.
I'm holding up a magic mouse. Obviously, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see me holding up my beloved magic mouse, which is a lovely thing, except when you want to come to charge it. It's awkward. It reminds me of... I'm holding up my Apple Pencil 2 now, which is, that's a brilliant thing. You just snap it on to the iPad and it charges away. But with the Magic Mouse, you have to plug it in with a lightning cable in a very awkward way, which can scratch the mouse, and it's not great at all. So a Magic Mouse that has some sophisticated way of charging that perhaps can be done on a regular basis, like the Apple Pencil 2 for your iPad, would be so much better.
It would, yeah. A wireless charging system, or at least I'm now holding up a Magic Mouse. There's the lightning charging port. As you can see, it's on the bottom of the mouse, which prevents you from using the mouse whilst you're charging it, if you've never seen that before. Ridiculous design when it could have been on the front or the back or somewhere like that. Not well thought out at all. The Apple Pencil 1 is another great example where, of course, they have fixed that now with Pencil 2, but there are still iPads that only support Pencil 1, so it's still a current product. And the way of charging that... Good point. Is if you haven't lost the minuscule little adapter they provide, is that you plug it into the bottom of your iPad, like some kind of phallic appendage, which is, it's not a winner, is it?
It's not favorite.
So please, Apple, fix these things. I actually don't care about the mouse anymore because of, in fact, this is a classic example of how Apple make money, right? Because of that stupid mouse design. And before anybody, again, hits us up in the comments section, yes, we know you've only got to plug it in for 5-10 minutes and you get, you know, an hour's use out of it or something. But still, that inconvenience right at a moment when you're trying to hit a deadline or something like that. It's what caused me to move over to the trackpad. So I now have three different trackpads for different machines in different places. And they cost... I don't know what they cost, but anyway, because Apple designed a crappy mouse, I've bought three of their... I've rewarded them by buying three of their trackpads and completely changing the way I work.
And thereby, you are actually helping the real Apple wallet, which is, of course, Tim Cook's pension fund.
Oh, wow. He is getting quite low on funds these days. So yeah. Have they dipped back under $2 trillion? I don't know. Anyway,
I don't know. I don't think they can buy any spare planets at the moment. I think they're a bit short of buying a new planet.
I think, to be honest, after this, after the pandemic has finished and all the governments in the world have got no money left because they've been giving it to everybody, then Apple will step in and just sort of take over the world. Anyway, when it comes to design mistakes, our policy is if you make a mistake, own it, fix it, move on. So Apple, please fix the mouse. Please don't make any more silly mistakes. Please don't preach to us about the environment. We want you to be environmentally friendly, but, you know, we don't believe you when you say that you are and then you do things that show that you're not. So we're not idiots. Please do what it is that you're saying that you're doing. Anyway, that's my little rant over. I shall climb back down off my soapbox. So depending on when we decide to launch this video, which will depend on when I get around to editing it, so it may go up at the usual time, 4 o'clock on a Monday, or I may put it up before that. So the Apple event is either tomorrow or it's in a few days' time, or if you're listening to this in 2021, then
it's, you know, been and gone, and you're probably laughing at us because we got it all wrong.
Probably.
But it's November the 10th, 2020. That's when it's happening. And based on how long this podcast is, you'll probably be editing it until November the 12th.
Probably. The Apple event's probably already started, actually, in fairness. We've been at it so long.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think what we'd need to do is we're going to watch that event together. We'll get our thoughts together and we'll put together another podcast, which will be, again, another special episode or some sort of video. Of course, we're under lockdown at the moment, so we can't go into the studio to film anything. So it'll have to be done like this. So we'll figure that out, and something will be up next week amongst other content that is also coming. So hopefully you can join us for that. I hope you've enjoyed our preview of the Apple event and our thoughts on Apple Silicon. And if you did enjoy it, as I said before, if you care to subscribe to our channel on YouTube, so youtube.com/constantgeekery, if you're not already watching, just one click of that subscribe button gets us one subscriber closer to our 10,000 goal, and we will appreciate it very much. Or you could choose not to subscribe at all, and then probably a kitten will die somewhere painfully.
I've got a bag of them. I haven't really. That was a joke.
Pete's like the biggest animal lover I know. He's busy building his own zoo at home. So that's it for today. Hopefully we did enough to earn a thumbs up or a like on whichever platform that you're watching us on. Thanks very much for your time. We'll see you again on the Constant Geekery podcast.
Cheerio.